It's a whole series of songs that tell the story of Faust.
Who?
Faust.
What label's he on?
Faust was a legendary German magician who sold his soul to the devil for worldly experience and power.
What is this, kid? School time? I got a plan to catch.
You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
Your little box. Gone to the very best schools, Miss Lonely Hearts, didn't you? From the suburbs to the university with daddy's money. No real life for you.
Sounds like some bad movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Brian. Brian, what did you do?
Yuzna!
What did you do, Brian? Why?
Welcome to a very, very special episode of Movie Sucktastic. I'm Scott, that's Joey, and we're talking about Faust.
Yeah. Last week, when the Wheel of Suck hit on it, I'm like, I've never heard of this. And Scott's like, oh, we're going to review this. I was like, should I use my, you know, my one veto? He goes, no, you don't want to do that. You want to review this. And oh my God, does this check every fucking box podcast?
I want to start with a little disclaimer. You know, like news channels always have, oh, by the way, the person speaking is on the payroll for an affiliate it's a sister company of ours. So, you know, just kind of a disclaimer at the beginning. Right. I got to mention that I don't know how the ring light's going to affect this, but first issue signed by both author and artist.
Wow. Quinn and Vigil.
Yep, Quinn and Vigil both signed it. It's one of the few comic books I'm still hanging on to. I got the framed copy right here. Wow. First printing as well. Wow. I was a comic book fan. I was a comic book nerd, and I was also a perverted little child, as opposed to the colossal pervert of an adult I am now.
Well, I mean, this was the next best thing to heavy metal, but it was actually more violent and more graphic.
Yeah,
as far as sex goes.
The big sell of the comic book, flat out, no bones about it, was this is graphically violent and graphically sexual in nature. And it's got black magic, witchcraft, crazy ass bullshit, nonsense in there. It's insane comic book. And it's not filmable.
Now, would you change your mind today? Like No. I'm not talking about a theatrical release. Like, say, HBO or Showtime, Cinemax, one of these cable companies that really are not restricted by their content if they turn this into a miniseries. Like, listen, when HBO was doing their real sex docuseries, they would do everything but show actual penetration. Like, they would show literally everything. Genitalia, men, women, sex acts. But like no penetration, but that was it. Everything else was there. So I think this could live as a miniseries on cable, like HBO or Showtime and et cetera. I do. I really, really do. So theater, no. This would get an NC-17 or an X rating of some kind, I'm sure. But cable miniseries? I don't know. I think it can be done.
I think we can compare this to the argument with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which I made the same argument. It's not filmable. Now, in that case, it was not filmable because of questionable material for the time period. And today, I've heard they're working on a TV, miniseries version, and I think they could pull that off. Okay. Just like they could pull the comic off. You know, that wasn't especially graphic. It was just the subject matter definitely wasn't going to fly for a mainstream film in the early 2000s.
Now, I never read this comic. So can you give me and the audience a little detail on the kind of unfilmable scenarios that you're saying that it has?
Well, let me real quick backtrack one more time to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Okay.
So remember my argument then was that that
pedophilia.
Their argument that maintaining loyalty to the source material or failing to do so is what cost the film. And my argument was no, because they couldn't remain loyal to the source material because the source material was not filmable at the time. So with this one, I would say the source material was not filmable. However, it's hard to make the loyalty to the source material argument when the screenwriter of the film is the writer of the comic book.
Yeah, Quinn, David Quinn.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw right. that.
And there's I have a couple of really weird arguments to make regarding this film. But the first one is the fact that this film is hurt by the fact that the writer of the comic book wrote the screenplay.
Yeah, it's happened before where they get the author of the book or the comic book or graphic novel, whatever you want. They get the original person and they're like, okay, you wrote this and we're going to hire you for the screenplay. And it doesn't work out.
Now, as far as lawyer, and I'll take it one step further too. Having read the comic, here's the weird part, man. I haven't read this comic book in decades. And I'm watching the film and lines of dialogue are leaping out at me. I'm like, that's directly from the comic book. I remember that line. The dialogue from the comic book, he pretty much just put it in a script form.
I mean, he probably should have.
No, he shouldn't. He should have changed it. Or that's what you meant, that he should have changed it or he shouldn't have changed
it. No, I mean, he should stick to his own source material. It's probably what he was asked to do by Brian.
No. But you have to adapt it to a different format. And here's where I think the film falls apart entirely. Brian Yuzna, originally it was supposed to be what's his name? Stuart Gordon.
Oh,
but
really?
He had to bail out for some reason. I don't know the specifics. Yuzna took over. It was a few years in pre-production. So I feel like now you see the opening, the long shots of the bridge the bridge.
Yeah, I was getting over the water. Batman vibes big time with his fucking trench coat.
You know he's kind of going for a comic book feel. You know he's doing that, and he is. But my argument is he didn't go far enough into comic book like Dick Tracy kind of three panel right. or three color panels surrealism or whatever, and. Quinn,
Hold on. This is also not used as wheelhouse either.
I know that's the negative. I'm not. You know,
I'm not saying the guy's stupid. No. I'm not saying. I mean, listen.
It's not.
I also think Yuzna was probably because it wasn't a huge budgeted film, but it was a quote unquote comic book movie, and he probably had there was probably too many cooks in the kitchen there. I think he was not steering the ship as much as he normally does. He had too much lip service of what he should do, and I'm sure he had some say, you know. But
I have to disagree with that with the soul, and this is only because I read the comic book.
I'm not saying everything, you know.
No. I wouldn't be disagreeing you if I didn't have a basis for it. I'm telling you, there was no meddling from studios or whatever, because this is the exact comic book. And I'm saying that's a negative as far as like that. It's what hurt the film. It's why the film isn't better. They didn't meet in the middle. Yuzna really didn't go Tim Burton with the comic book aspect, and Quinn didn't translate it to human beings talking. There's a difference between having a panel with a picture drawn of a guy with a wacky face like that,
right,
and saying a lot like two or three lines, because you're looking at the picture and you're reading the lines and you got the voice in your head. It's different. There's a difference between that and him just going on his Dane Cook rant in the insane asylum
in the cell.
Yeah, ranting at the girl, and I'm recognizing lines too. Is that, oh, play Wagner, it's got more blood. And I'm like, yeah, I remember that line, but that's not how it sounded in my fucking head, because the lines don't work in a human. I mean, the actor did what he could.
So what you're saying is they work on the page, but not on the screen.
They work on a comic book page, but not in a human being's mouth.
Here's a perfect example.
You just have to finesse it a bit. No, you know who did the best job?
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, the person did the best job with the dialogue that, again, I'm saying I could crack this open and prove it, that it was lifted right from a comic book, is Jeffrey Combs, who sadly is, this is like the most normal he's ever been in a film.
Yeah, I see.
Except for the third act.
Well, no, then he goes back to, it's like, oh, there he is.
Yeah, well, there's Jeffrey.
Yeah, there he is.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Hey, there he is. Frightmare. There it is.
Yeah, but because he has, like, you know, passably normal dialogue, right. So he's able to kind of fit it more into a human world. Everybody else is acting like it's a straight movie, but it's really I don't know. It needed to go less realism or more. Right. And here's the problem: you can't do more realism because the comic book was like, when I say graphic, I mean like X-rated graphic. I mean there's penetration. I mean there's demons doing stuff. The one heavy for M, we'll talk about M in a second.
Right.
But the one heavy for M with the leather jacket looked like he's right out of the 70s.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I mean, it was like watching The Watchmen, and you see the panels like, oh shit, that's like the same jacket he was wearing. Same thing. Like I was like, holy shit, I'm having flashbacks to the comic book now. This is the guy from the comic. How did they do that? But that scene where I'm pretty sure that when she, and that in that scene, she doesn't just cut his throat. She like drives his eyes into his head and tears it off and is like licking it. I'm pretty sure something like that. Wow. Okay. So there are graphic shots that I recognize as panels from the comic. So they were really trying to be close to it, but there's so much gore they couldn't show, and definitely so much sex they couldn't show. And honestly, the only way to really do the comic justice in a film, because it's not made for that, would be to do like a Caligula hardcore porn violent action film, horror film, which isn't going to happen, at least not a good one.
Yeah. And that's where I say the TV miniseries, they can't do X-rated stuff, but they can get close to it.
They can get by enough
where the comic book fan will be happy because they know they can't show triple X penetration anywhere unless it's a porno and they want it to be successful. So they would be happy to take, okay, all right, we can tone that down a little bit, you know? But here's an example of where I was going before, of where it's great on paper, but doesn't translate to the screen. So, and I'll make this super brief. Stephen King's book, Christine, right? In the book, the car talks. All right? Do you know how stupid that would sound if the car talked in the fucking movie?
Thank you.
And I had someone come to me because they saw the book on my shelf. And they said, oh, what a great book and what a shitty movie. And I did like what, excuse me? And they're
one
like,
of those.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, it just, what a terrible movie. The car doesn't talk. Like, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. And then we got into a whole thing about how, you know, and I'm like, I'll leave it at that. But I'm like, yeah, no. It
words works were in the, said, punches were thrown.
It works in the book. But it is not going to work on film. Fucking car talk. Stop it.
See, that's the thing. That's why there's a category for adapted screenplay in the Oscars. Because it's not easy to take something from another medium, another format, and translate it, you know, successfully. I said the same thing about The Phantom when we reviewed that. Can't be done. I just don't think there's no way you're going to do that. That's going to appeal to a mass audience. Right. There's just something inherently goofy about the guy running around in tights. Siskel himself said so. So, I mean, but yes, you That's and the problem too is I would normally say, well, you know, and don't just rip off the idea then, but that's what this is. This is a rip off of actual Faust. It really is just a retelling of Faust, just like Phantom of the Paradise or a number of other films. And you know, it says so, just like Phantom of the Paradise and a number of other films.
And not being a person who read the comics, I have nothing to go by, and I still walked out of this thinking it was a fucking terrible movie.
Well, so what I'm saying is, any fan of the comic book, the only reason you're a fan of this comic book, the only thing the comic book has that is like unique, I mean, the writing's not bad. I'm not calling it writing bad, but it's really, it's just the graphic violence and sex in the comic book. That was the selling point. That's why we bought it. That's why we were reading it at the feed bag.
The feed bag. Did you just make a Bloomfield reference?
Yes,
that's
I did.
Just for you and me, baby.
I know. Well, somebody else, maybe. Somebody else out there, maybe.
But I love the feedback.
So adapting it and losing the one thing that really made it attractive is ridiculous. And if they had pushed the envelope and said, okay, you know, we're going to make this so graphic, it's going to get banned. If they had tried to push the envelope extremely, then at least they would have had that.
Right.
I mean, like Society, Yuzna really pushed the realms with the whole shunting in Society.
Wasn't that film shelved for like two or three years?
That was Yuzna. That wasn't Gordon, right?
No, Society was Yuzna.
Yes, that's what.
But I also believe it was shelved for a while, 2-3 years, because of how graphic it was and like the boundaries that it crossed and all that stuff.
Faust should have been made and shelved and like in 2010, a year after we started this podcast, they should have released, oh, by the way, this was so graphic we couldn't even get it out the door. But he didn't. He pulled back. Quinn was too enamored with his own writing to do anything different with it.
Right.
And we haven't even covered the basic plot, but the basic plot is just by the way, so the opening scene, they rip off The Crow right off.
Well, yeah, and the thing is too, like, you know, real quick, where I was saying earlier where there was a lot of chefs in the kitchen, do you think Yuzna would have went with all the shitty metal music? Like, it's not even good metal.
Definitely.
I mean, because it just seems like it's a sign of the time. Like, if you look at movies from the late 90s into the 2000s, it had that kind of music. It had this kind of pacing. It just seemed like there were people on set. It's like, listen, let's do it like this because this is what everyone is doing right now, and it's going to be great. Trust me. I just kind of get the feeling that Yuzna put his own take on this. And that's why you got all the fucking KY jelly. and you know, all the type of violence that he does, the type of sex scenes that he does, that's all Yuzna, you can tell. But all of the other little things, like the fucking metal music and the type of slow-mo, it just seems like that's a sign of the times.
I'm confused by your using the term shitty heavy metal music. What do you mean? Are you against a little headbanging in your horror films?
No, I love headbanging, but this is budget headbanging. These are artists that they could get cheap for the movie. This is not
good. So?
It's not good metal music. There's one song by Sepultura. There's one song by Sepultura, and that's it. The other bands, I never even heard of them.
I've never heard of Sepultura.
I'm not going to debate metal music with you, sir. It's not happening.
I know what I like, and I enjoyed the soundtrack.
No, you didn't. All right, let me send you some stuff, okay?
You better don't send me Rush 2112.
I did that already a long time ago.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Don't do it. Don't send that one.
No, they couldn't afford to put Rush in this movie. It's almost a $6 million budget. All right.
But so was it Jeffrey Jurgensen? Johnny Quest was the what? John Jaspers is the name of the character. Yes,
played by Mark Frost, I believe.
Who is in Poldark?
Yeah. He's a British guy, and as a matter of fact,
yeah.
Well, here's what's interesting. What I noticed, and I'm sure it was just a mistake. At one point in the prison cell, he has a British accent, and I'm like, is this a take that they used that was like the best one, but his British accent came out? Because he doesn't have a British accent throughout the rest of the movie. Or
I was
it just overlooked by the editor who isn't good at his job?
Not prison. It was a mental institution.
I said he was in a, well, mental facility.
It was a padded cell.
Padded cell,
it was a padded cell.
When I say cell, I mean padded cell.
I just wanted to clarify for those who haven't seen the film, which I you know.
But, yeah, he was full-on British in that scene. And I'm like, wait a minute, yeah, is this a British character?
I think he slipped in those scenes in the padded cell, but when he turned into Faust, or the slasher, whatever the hell the they call demon. Him, in this, he actually uses his British accent, which I thought was interesting, making his alter ego British.
Yeah. It's so stupid.
What? I thought it was cool. All right, now what? Come on. All right, so a bunch of gangsters kill John Jasper's girl, a la The Crow. He goes to kill himself, but he's talked out of it by the eye patch guy from Lost. What? Yeah. It's bugging me for a half hour. So Julian Sands and Christopher Lambert had a love child, and this is it.
Yeah.
Because I can't figure out who this person is. I had to look it up, and I'm like, wait, the guy from Lost? Really?
Yeah.
Holy shit. but he convinces the guy ready to kill himself to sell his soul, and I'm still a little vague on the terms. Like when he convinces him, he's just like, well, why not? He's like, okay. He's like, that's really the argument he gave. Was like, why not do it? It's like, well, all right, I guess so.
I guess. Why not?
It wasn't really in Phantom of the Paradise, which I, you know, obviously I'm biased, right. But there's a reason, there's a goal, there's a purpose to like the selling. There's a reason why the character is manipulated in such a way. There's no reason here. He's just like, oh, well, the girlfriend's dead. What else is there? Yeah. Let's kill. Yeah.
You know what I was thinking while I was watching this? I'm like, oh, we need to add either Wishmaster or the Wishmaster franchise to the Wheel of Suck. Because the guy, the main guy, he's like, make your wishes. He's that fucking guy from the Wishmaster movies. And I'm like, oh, this guy's annoying as fuck.
I've never seen any of them, so definitely add that.
Oh, I'm going to add him then. I've seen the first one. It's okay. Let's put it this way. It's the best in the series, and the series isn't very good.
Here's another reason why loyalty to the source material doesn't work. In the comic book, which was in installments, you know, it's like a comic book, so it's like 9-10 issues over the period of time. Like, you break up the story because you can't tell it all in one chunk or linearly, and you want to do... There's no reason why this film's first half should have been nonlinear. There is no reason why we should have started. It should have started where it started, but then it should have kept going with the suicide and the. We didn't have to go to Jeffrey Combs proving that he's a cop for half an hour before we got all of that done. And then while they're doing all of that,
Jeffrey Combs. So, he didn't say it, but he's like, I'm too old for this shit. He had that moment. Where he's like, I'm gonna go in there. Wait for backup. Nah, I'm gonna go in alone. It's like, what are you doing, Jeffrey?
He was just he was still excited about the film because he didn't have the script for the third act yet.
I'm convinced that if Brian Usna just called Jeffrey Combs, like, listen, I'm making this thing. You want to be in it? He's like, yeah, because they're buddies. They're friends. They have a great working relationship.
How many movies have they made together? Brian, tell me there's not going to be any slime, Brian. I'm done with the slime. I'm done with the no prosthetics, no slime. Please. No. You just play a cop. I'll send you. If the script's not done yet, I'll send you the first two acts. We'll get you to the third. But trust me.
Brian, why do you love KY jelly so much? I don't understand. Why? Why you love this so fucking much? There's KY in hell? Is that what you're telling me?
So the reason why the pie patch guy from Lost Mephistopheles, so you know the devil, the reason why he tricks him into selling his soul is to use him as a vigilante, not a vigilante, as an unpaid assassin, basically.
Yeah.
Go kill. Do you his killed bidding. Your people now? Kill these people for me.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you these powers. You can kill all these people. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, and he's supposed to self destruct, but he doesn't. And instead, Jeffrey Combs catches him because he's a cop that doesn't play by the rules. No, and through that, he meets the repressed psychologist who's trying to help him with music therapy, which is fucking great. And in the comic book, the song that was constantly used was Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, but I'm pretty sure they couldn't afford that. So they kind of let that drop.
Brian Usna is still alive? He is still alive. Looks like good. He looks like he retired. Hasn't made a movie since 2011.
So yeah, so the rest of the film is like this. Mephistopheles has this weird Machiavellian plot that involves getting the psychiatrist and the cop to become part of his satanic ritual that's going to end the world, of course. And the only the ointment is the fact that John Jaspers won't stay dead. They capture him and bury him alive,
yeah.
But somehow that doesn't work.
I just, was that in the comic? I mean,
what?
Which part? That they bury him and it's like, yeah, this is good enough.
Yes.
Like, you gave him all these fucking powers. What makes you think this is going to fucking stick?
Yeah, with AUS and the tombstone, I remember I was like, again, flashback from the comic book. Yeah, I remember that panel. This is like panel for panel, faithful to the comic book. I remember this, and then the shadows covered to make it the Faust, and yeah, I remember all this shit. It's in there. Everything's in here except 10 times more extreme.
Yeah,
the blood, the violence, the sex. That shower sequence is hard. Or in the comic book.
Oh, really? Nice.
The shot. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's no. Yeah. There's. It was. The later issues, they had the cover because they were graphically, sexually explicit and violent.
Nice.
And I love it.
It sounds like you love it.
Yeah.
I will give them credit for trying to make this, you know, into a comic book. Now, Spawn had come out, what, a couple of years earlier? 97, 96, 97, 98, somewhere in that range. So they had a little bit, because that was an R-rated comic book. So they had a little bit to go on. You know, they were like, okay, Spawn did this, and, you know, we're going to...
It was more commercial.
Yeah, we're going to try, and we're still making a comic book movie, but we're going to do it our way. You know, mm-hmm. and again, that's why I think Usna had some help with this. I don't think his voice was the only one heard making this movie.
But I can't stress to you enough how identical to the comic book it is. Like, they didn't change anything that I can think of without reading the comic again.
And I'll tell you,
honestly don't know if I want to.
All of that sounds like that's a winning formula.
But not when you can't go full. You can't go full graphic.
No, I get it. The most
graphic this movie gets is the most ridiculous scene in it, the TNA puddle. Which, you know.
Oh my god!
Okay, add body horror to the trope checklist.
100,000 gallons of KY in that scene.
Yeah, I mean, You have the giant orgy sequence at the end, right. Much more graphic in the comic book. The monster demon comes out. The rubber demon at the end. I really wish they had made it look like one of the penisauruses from Flesh Gordon at the end. Wow. That would have made more sense at that point.
If
they had done it like Flesh Gordon and went a little bit campy with it, it may have sold better. But it really tries to go for like a... And the heavy metal music adds to that. Heavy metal music, there's nothing self-referential or... Heavy metal is just basically in your face.
If it was good heavy metal music, it's not.
Yeah. Heavy metal doesn't do camp. It just does heavy metal.
No. Well, here's the thing too.
So they were taking the film seriously, and that's a drawback. That's definitely a drawback.
Well, you were saying if they went like Flesh Gordon and went camp, Flesh Gordon got an X rating, so this movie probably would have done the same.
And that's the only way they could have done it.
An NC-17, to be completely honest, which would have been box office suicide, but it didn't do well anyway. So
yeah. As opposed to what they shot?
Yeah, I mean...
that wasn't it, box office it, suicide?
What I think what it ended up doing theatrically in the States was... Excuse me. New York and L.A., maybe a few hundred theaters, and that was it. And then it mostly just hit the film festival scene. And as a matter of fact, it didn't come out in the States until 2001, even though the timestamp on this, it's from the year 2000. Didn't hit the States till two. It actually, not only did it not hit the States, it didn't hit other countries till 2001 either. It hit Spain first in 2000.
And that was the death period for horror films. 2000, oh my God, early,
so bad.
They were still reeling from the Tipper Gore shit in the 90s, and the Robert Downey Jr. stuff in the 80s. Like MPAA had such a stranglehold on horror films by the time the 90s rolled around. With Freddy and Jason and Michael Myers all coming out, they were just like, just fuck this. We're not letting any of it in. Not a drop of blood. It would have been nice if they really pushed it. That's all I'm saying. I just wanted to say this real quick.
Sure.
I remember it's like, okay, Blast from the Past. Like, wow, Tim Vigil, man, that guy is fucking insane. I wonder what else has he done since then. I got to look him up. Oh, he's got a Wikipedia page. The only thing it mentions was a member of the Rebel Studios crew, which is the comic book, company that he wrote Faust for. And in the early 2000s, he created artwork for System of a Down's drummer's drum kit.
When was that?
In the early 2000s, he was commissioned to create artwork for the drum kit used by System of a Down's drummer, John Dolmayan.
Oh.
Dolmayan? I don't know. You probably know.
Couldn't get System of a Down in this? Because that's good metal.
Well, it was after the fact, so I guess they... I think they were fans of the comic, because they asked him to do art for it, not like plot out a scene. Yeah.
No. But so, if they're a fan of the comic, it's like, hey, we're making the movie. Do you want some of your music? No. We've seen the dailies. Can't do it.
So apart from the bibliography, like, that's it. It's just, yeah, he had a he belonged to a comic book company, and he drew a drum kit. I was hoping for more. I was hoping for like some kind of weird Alan Moore thing where, oh yeah, right, he's a reclusive now and all this. No, he's just an artist. You dipshit. Quinn, same thing. Say, oh, Quinn. Yeah, he works on other stuff too. Oh, cool. All right. That's it. Yeah, they wrote a demon thing and made a demon film. That's it. They're not demons.
I'm looking at some of these slides. I haven't looked at them yet, and it's just like, the monkey face that he makes throughout this movie.
If I had a slide for every goofy face this motherfucker made, and that here again doesn't translate from comic book. Like, his face is actually pretty close to like what the character would look like in the comic book. And honestly, some of them, I can see why they hired him for the role. He was really nailing some of those expressions. However, they still don't work because it's not a comic book. This is a human being's face. And what and then holding it and then saying the lines, it's like, oh, this is not bad. I thought he looked better in the makeup, honestly.
I thought the makeup was okay. I thought him in the actual costume was okay. I didn't hate it. As a matter of fact, when he was on screen in full costume, I'm like, yeah, I could tell. I was like, they really did try to make a comic book movie here. They did. They really did try. It just didn't work out.
I like the flesh cape that pops. I like the flesh cape that pops out of his back.
Yeah, you had the screenshot of that was just up a minute ago.
That's just right. Yeah, I mean, it was an ambitious project, and I really wish Quinn had, like, I don't know, just got some help. There should have been a second screen. Honestly, just got some help. I mean, there are some, like David Scow, he wrote a bunch of screenplays, but he wrote a bunch of screenplays. I mean, he had more experience to that, and he was a novelist, not a comic book author. Big difference. I'm not saying he's not a writer, too. Quinn is obviously a writer, but, I mean, when you've got dozens of novels under your belt, you have a bit more of a command of the English language. I mean, it's just as far as a profession. I don't know. I'm not trying to shit on Quinn at all, but he should have got help.
Yeah, he could write comic books, but screenplays, it's like, get some help.
I did like when Jeffrey Combs' character, oh, that was the stupid name of the cop too. That was even worse. Dan Margolis. Which is great, because that's the guy, the Dan Margolis is the guy who, I'm pretty sure, is the guy who directed the Miss America pageant when I worked on it.
Oh my God, really?
No, yeah. Jeff Margolis. Sorry, different. But yeah, but I like when he turns bad in the third act and he starts mocking the psychiatrist. Am I damaged enough for you now? Says, well, yeah. Honestly,
and
yeah.
He brings us back in. Way to go, Jeffrey.
But I felt bad for him, because when you go back to that desk scene where he's so subdued, it's like, oh, I don't have to overact, I don't have to glare, I don't have to like, I'm just like, I'm a human being, and it's like, I'm like, oh, this isn't gonna end well for poor Jane, for Jeffrey. No, so refreshing.
Well,
I did like the speech that the commissioner gives at near the end, just before M like eats his head, or eats him.
Oh.
With his yeah. stomach monster. What the fuck's going on?
Well, I mean,
but I love those. I know what I should do. Maybe I should go tell the mayor that there's a secret cabal here that's letting this guy run around and kill people, because we're going to hold a magic ritual that's going to bring about the destruction of humankind. Why don't I tell the mayor that? I know why, because he think I'm fucking insane. That's why. It was nice to get that out of the way in the same breath. It's like, I should turn all you guys in, but you know what? I can't even do that because this is fucking insane. I did appreciate that moment before it went all the thing on us.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's the monster in the slide. It's so fucking bad.
And Mephistopheles is like such an overpowered character in this film. Like she shoots him with the shotgun point blank. They inject him full of stuff. He's impervious except from the actual demon. You know, that's the only thing that really can kill this guy.
Right.
So it just, after a while, it's like, okay, so, you know, what's all the tension here? We just do what he says. Just do what he says. Why is he going around picking people off of bridges? He can get anybody to do this. What? Jesus.
Well, he saw something.
And he did. And he wasn't even the one that, like, had his girlfriend's people killed. They were just like a street gang because she wasn't turning tricks for him. And Holly was the first person to say, you know, they would have just like kidnapped her and forced her to turn tricks, so I don't know why they're killing a good, perfectly good prostitute. so yeah, all right, it pulls a crow and fails miserably.
Well listen, when was a crow? It's like 8 years earlier, something like that.
Comic book wise earlier.
Crow, no, well, yeah, but... well, when was the comic done? Was that in the late 90s?
The problem is both of them were very sporadic release. They weren't monthly issues. They came out, Faust came out like once every year, every other. I think the last issue took 4 years or 5 years to come out.
Jesus Christ.
They just took their sweet ass time. Yeah, these small press comic book people, they have other jobs and shit. So it takes them some time. Yeah, some of your best comic books just took forever. I remember The Tick didn't come out regularly.
Ooh, excuse me.
Zinhite.
Thank you.
You got a mute button there for that.
I don't know where it is. I have no idea where it is. Mute button.
Okay.
Sorry.
No. I just lost my track.
We were talking about when they were released, and they released them slowly.
Oh, yeah. They were released sporadically, but I can tell you that the first Crow comic book, the issue number one, came out way before like my early high school career, but Faust came out in my mid high school career, the first issue, I think. I'd have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure Crow came out first by a little bit. I'm not even saying they're ripped off the Crow. I'm just saying it's the exact same beginning, but it doesn't work here. It works for the Crow. As far as like setup, as far as like boyfriend's girl was killed by this street gang, boyfriend now takes vengeance in a supernatural form. Exact same film setup.
Got it.
But Faust botches it.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the music slides that you have up. All of the music was published by Roadblock Music.
Yes.
And Roadrunner Records, which means,
well,
all the music was easy to attain, and it was garbage, and it was cheap.
Well, no. Well, also, let's just to be a little fair here, so this was the first feature film for the Fear Factory, which was what they were trying to do was create a Hispanic or Latino, I'm not sure which way they phrased it, but like a Hispanic only production company. So they would be making, they would be, you know, hiring. Actually, if you look at the credits, you see a lot about translators too on set. So they were really trying to inject the Hispanic community into the film industry through this low budget production. So they, as a production company, they probably were able to get like, you know, okay, we'll buy you, you know, we'll buy your label, you know, and obviously they can't afford a big label. So they got copyright to, you know, access to certain label record songs. I'm babbling at that point, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. I hear you.
Yeah, but I thought that was interesting, and the whole thing, the Fear Factory was defunct. I think like 5 years later, 2005. Yep. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I don't doubt it.
Yeah, but I found it interesting. Like this was the first film we're gonna launch our new studio with this. This is a good sign.
We've worked all our lives. We double mortgaged our houses.
And you can tell that the fact that they picked this yeah. as their first film shows that they were at least like cognizant of the idea that they wanted to push the envelope. And I think they thought they pushed it, but when you compare it to the comic book, they didn't even get close.
Right.
And if they had pushed, I'm repeating myself. I say if they had pushed the envelope a little bit more, maybe we'd be talking about this film more now, and maybe my comic book would be worth more.
Oh, I love this comic book cover in the top right, top left. It says "Not for Children."
Yeah, they had to start putting that on them. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just because you know the other one said adult reading, and it's like, well, you know, my child is mature. It's like, not this mature.
Yeah, no. They started wrapping them like Playboy near the end. They became quite notorious, I remember.
Wow. I don't remember this comic at all.
It was, again, it was like late 80s. No.
'90s.
I mean, when the comic book came out.
Yeah, I thought the comic book came out in the 90s.
Yeah. I have no real concept of time anymore.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, no, I got it right here. I got the first issue. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. 1988.
Yep.
Thank you.
I'm looking at it right here. 1988.
See, so I told you early high school career. That's when I started high school, 1988.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't
start. So when did The Crow?
I started high school in 90, so yeah, that makes sense.
Oof. The Crow started in 1989. Ah,
main series known as Faust, debuted in 88 with new issues published irregularly, roughly once a year or sometimes every two. David Quinn completed a script in 1996 when writing the proposal to sell the film. Quinn is the one that got it off the ground.
Sure, he's the writer. It's like he was the main guy. Vigil co-wrote, but I mean, it was mainly Quinn doing it.
But that's interesting.
Yeah, the Crow had the same kind of publishing thing, you know, in 1989 through like 1999. But that was even less issues than Faust. Faust, I think, was you probably have in front of you, but it was
like eight or more. Ten.
Yeah, Crow was less than that. It was like four or five, depending on what graphic novel you get or whatever. Still a lot of adaptations. Yeah, they came out roughly the same time. I was not accusing Quinn of robbing from Crow. And I wouldn't even accuse the other way. It's just a very simple concept. But they do start practically the same way. By the way, I saw a headline that said that people are very, 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 very unhappy with the new Crow film. So that means it might be good.
I don't know, man. I mean, listen, everyone complains about everything nowadays.
I know. That's why I think it might be good.
But I don't know. I'm going to be open-minded about it. Even though I don't think the trailer looked any good. Personally,
I thought it looked great, but I like the Joker with a grill. I like new things.
Joker with a grill. Please don't talk to me.
All right, let's talk ratings. Faust was rated a hard R, and it's also rated 4.4 on IMDb.
Two very appropriate ratings and scores.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't go that low for the movie, would you?
What? What?
I don't know. I think. All right. Yeah, I know. I know.
Four, dude. This is a fucking.
I got a soft
four.
Spot for this dude. I got it. This is like a childhood.
I love Yuzna. I love Yuzna, and I'm sure if
this
I read the comic,
this is a childhood memory.
If I read the comic, you know, I probably would be with you. But as a movie, this movie fucking sucked.
1988. How old was I in 1988? I was reading 14. This. I was 14 and I was reading this. Holy shit.
No, 15. Racist comic book store. 15. You were, 15. Well, you're 14 turning 15. Depended on when it actually came out.
Racist comic book store guy was selling this shit. That's great.
To you, underage reader. And
actually, he had me behind the counter selling it to other underage readers. Well, that's great. I love that. It's currently at 4.4. I got a soft spot for it, so I want to give it a 5.
But here's
what
the thing.
Are you thinking?
Look at other movies we've given a 5. Is this on par or the same as those?
No, I know. I know it's not.
So it's a fucking 4.
Oh, I just feel bad giving it a 4. It wanted so much. And it's
they tried. They tried, but
it's so. And even though it was to the detriment of the film, it's so rare to see a comic book guy just like given like complete control over the screenplay to such an extent that it ruins the film. You know, it's like a warm feeling.
Probably went in to go, you know, I'm going to stick to my own source material. Everyone keeps changing shit. I'm going to stick to it. And this is going to be great. People are going to love the fact that I didn't change stuff. And then it didn't work out.
You know who got to him?
Who got to him?
Alan Moore. Don't let those fuckers change a thing. You got gold and you know it. They always change my shit. So yeah, but it's better then. Shut up.
Maybe. Who knows? Never know.
When Rasputin calls, don't answer. That's all I'm saying. All right, 4 stars. I'm with you.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you.
There it is.
Thank you.
So that's it. My childhood comic book adaptation. We don't do enough comic book adaptations, but I really don't want to do the new Marvel and DC stuff. We got to do some stuff on the edge.
We should do some older comic book stuff like the Roger Corman Fantastic Four. I don't think we've ever reviewed it.
I threw a few comic book related things on the wheel.
Is Roger Corman? I added it. I have the new wheel. Is Roger Corman's Fantastic Four in this wheel? I didn't look.
I didn't add it.
I just don't remember reading if you did, because I know you added more movies than me.
I think I did. I think I put Fantastic Four.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's any one of three terrible Fantastic Fours.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have the original Corman. Then you have the first comic book one after the Corman. And then they did a reboot of it. And all three are bad in their own way.
There was also the Silver Surfer sequel. There's two Fantastic Four films.
I'm talking about just
Fantastic Four,
Fantastic Four, Fantastic Four. They made a movie called The Fantastic Four, Roger Corman. And then they did the first Fantastic Four. And then they did the reboot Fantastic Four. I know there's a sequel, Silver Surfer. I know that. I'm just talking about three different times that they tried.
Different iterations.
Yes, that they tried to make Fantastic Four and failed at all three times.
Gotcha. All right. Okay.
Although the Tim Story Fantastic Four of all three is probably the best one. That's how bad the reboot was.
Yeah. No, they're all bad.
There's not a good one among them. No. Well, I mean, if there is.
It's on the wheel. It's on the wheel.
There is an order for the three. I just don't exactly. I know the Corman one is the worst one, but it's the most entertaining because it's so fucking bad. It's perfect for our show. We'll put it that way.
I agree.
All right. Let's bring up the wheel of suck.
Oh, 250 some odd.
No, 239.
I added some stuff too.
No, I grabbed it from the new list. It came in at 239. All right. I'm assuming that's the list. Hey now. Okay, good. Let's get you on the screen. Oh boy.
And I got the Disney sub list all set up too.
I didn't add that to this list. I figured that's
just going to be a different wheel. No, that's a separate, because one of the entries is Disney wheel. And then we have to spin the Disney wheel.
So I should have created it just in case
it lands on. I created it. No, I got it. No, it took a second.
No, well, I'll just create it on my end real quick if it lands on it.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. That's
Yeah. No, yeah. I'll just make one super quick. All right. I mean, the odds.
Shut up, Scott.
What are the odds? Spin the wheel. It's 1 in 239. Those are the odds.
Yep.
You ready? Here we go. Oh, boy.
My money's on spin again.
No whammies. Fuck.
Uh-oh. What is it?
Quest for Fire.
Oh, I just added that today.
Did you add that today? Quest for Fire. Now, this is the one.
Quest for Fire.
This is the one where there's no English dialogue. It's Ron Perlman, I believe, in like a Neanderthal suit. Is this the movie I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
And it's like an hour and a half or 2 hours of like basically just Neanderthals figuring out how to use fire.
You can veto it if you want. I'm just trying to put inject a little culture into the show. That's all.
I know. And I'm just trying to think, do I want to review this fucking thing? I don't.
Veto it.
I don't. I'm going to veto it.
All right. If it's worse, I'm going to laugh.
Yeah, because I only get one veto, right? Do you get a veto? Do we both get a veto?
We get one veto each.
Okay. All right, here we go. We're doing it again. Here it is. Come on. Big money. No whammies. All right. This is more in our wheelhouse. Bulletproof Monk.
I haven't seen that. I saw that in the theater.
This is Chow Yun-Fat, right?
Chow Yun-Fat. I saw that in the theater. Yeah. I have not seen it since. It was never worth looking up. So all I remember is that I did not like it. So
I don't think I've ever seen it. I might have, but I don't remember Bulletproof Monk.
Oh, I remember nothing.
I just remember that Chow Yun-Fat
disappointment.
Yeah, well, I remember Chow Yun-Fat being in it, and it was not received well.
I remember popcorn and disappointment.
All right, so no veto from you?
Nope. This is a go.
All right, Bulletproof Monk. All right. I'm excited about this one. See, Quest of Fire is supposed to be, it's like a French director that did that, right?
It's an art house film.
Is that
Jeannot?
It's not Jeannot, is it?
I don't know.
I don't remember. Anyway, I'm going to look it up now that I've said it, because when I don't look things up, when I'm like, I don't know who directed it, I know people are...
I was joking because you said Jeannot.
I know what you were doing, and I dismissed it. I'm sorry.
I'm used to that.
But when I do things like that, and they don't say who the director is, I scream in my car, or when it's Jean-Jacques Annaud. Yeah, it's got a 7.3. Out of 10. So
I believe it was up for an Oscar.
It was. It absolutely was. So I'm just not in the mood. It's supposed to be good, and I don't know. I'm not in the mood for it.
We're doing Bulletproof Monk.
I'm
going to tell my wife. So we could have been watching Quest for Fire. Now we're watching Bulletproof Monk. I honestly have no idea what the reaction will be, because her favorite's Clan of the Cave Bear. I don't know how she feels about this one.
Oh my God, Clan of the Cave Bear. That's the one with Daryl Hannah, right?
Yep, based on my wife's read all the books. There's like five of them.
Oh.
That wily bitch has invented everything in the prehistorics.
Ooh, yeah, Bulletproof Monk. I'm looking at it now on IMDb. Yeah, it's the right choice.
Yeah. All right. So Bulletproof Monk. We'll catch you guys next week.
All right. That sounds good. All right. Let me go. Let me get this on the road here.
Let's wrap it up, baby.
All right, everybody. As usual, thank you for joining us yet again for another episode 418 of Movie Sucktastic, where we just reviewed Faust, Love of the Damned. Oh, yeah. Yuzna. Why did you do it, man? You can go to our website, You can go to our website at moviesucktastic.com. You can download the show. You can listen to the show. You can click on the YouTube link. If there's a video, it'll take you right to it. You can go to iTunes, and you can listen to the show there as well. You can go to facebook.com/moviesucktastic, and you can see everything that we post is usually on Facebook. You can go to our Letterboxd page that Scott has done. Is that letterboxd.com/moviesucktastic? Does that sound right?
Yes, it is.
Very nice. Yep. If you want to leave us email, the address is themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com. If you want to leave us voicemail, you can at 908-514-4470. You can download the MovieSucktastic podcast app for your Android devices. And that's moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk. Or just download your favorite podcast player for whatever device you're using and just do a search for Movie Sucktastic. We will come right up. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
I always wanted to know the truth. Now I am the truth!
Very nice. Oh, there it is. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Yeah. Snakey, snikey.
Snickety,
snickety. Snickety, snickety. Where we're going to review Bulletproof Monk.
Bulletproof Monk.
Yeah, baby. All right, everybody. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.